This Tuesday is the end of the 2022 election season with, of course, Election Day. While much focus has been on the candidate races, we have many states also having questions on the ballot. These ballot questions serve as another way for the voice of the people to resonate even more loudly. They also can serve, believe it or not, as voter research for both office holders as well as candidates. This is something my first guest today recently wrote about at CNN.com. He's a fellow with the Ethics and Public Policy Center, Patrick T. Brown. How are you today, Patrick?
Oh, very good. Thanks for having me on.
Website for the Ethics and Public Policy Center, eppc.org, and we have that link at our homepage as well. Piece, by the way, that Patrick wrote about is entitled State Ballot Initiatives Pose a Challenge for Conservatives. And as soon as I saw that title, Patrick, first thing that took me to, and you address it as well in the article, Kansas and the abortion ballot question, had a person, representative from a pro-life organization on not too long after that vote took place, who basically had no other option. They had to say, man, we blew that one.
Yeah, and it is a real challenge for conservatives who, you know, I think a lot of Republicans are looking at the overall race and feeling very optimistic about the chance of taking back Congress and some of these governor races that are very close and edging in a redward direction. But other states are going to be having the same question on the ballot that Kansas did over the summer. And you're right, it is something that I think pro-life conservatives especially are a little bit behind the eight ball on, because in California, Michigan, Kentucky, and Vermont all have abortion-related amendments on their ballot. And even if they take back Congress and maybe a governor's mansion or two, those constitutional amendments will preserve the right to abortion, in some cases, very late-term abortions at the state level. And so that's something that conservatives need to be aware of.
And as well, too, with the pro-life advocacy looking for purity, how can a conservative candidate go from no abortion, no how, no way, to go into what most people would seem to think as a more rational presentation or concept of, if the to save the life of the mother and put a time limit of, well, ranges usually between 6 to 15 weeks, 15 pretty much being the by and large the dominant. But a lot of conservative candidates fear doing that because they fear the loss of voter support would be too much for them.
Yeah, I think Republicans took a while to figure out their footing after the Dobbs decision got handed down over the summer. It was a little bit like the dog who caught the car, right? Now what do we do?
Yeah.
And in these last couple of weeks, I think you're seeing some Republican politicians do a better job of counterpunching when it comes to abortion, pointing out that, you know, wherever we agree a common sense framework is for regulating abortion, whether that's 12 weeks or whatever, most Democratic candidates who are campaigning currently have never met an abortion restriction that they'll be in support of. And that goes for, you know, Katie Hobbs in Arizona, John Fetterman up in Pennsylvania, other Democrats who basically say the government shouldn't be involved in the decision at all. And I think that's an extreme position, just as much as saying, you know, no abortions ever. It's always going to be a question of, okay, what's going to be allowed and what's on the table and what circumstances. And I think pro-life candidates have done a much better job of finding that sort of middle ground and talking about it in a way that appeals to voters. But these black and white constitutional amendments that go in front of voters really just have a very stark, you know, it's either all abortions all the time or no abortions ever. And that's where I think pro-life conservatives are going to end up on the losing end of things.
Especially when you look, too, if the statistics are indeed accurate, how voter registration has been really dominated by women registering to vote.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes the gender gap on abortion can be overplayed, but certainly in the months following the Supreme Court's decision, we did see a surge in activism among young, college-educated white women who tend to vote very heavily Democratic. So again, even if their votes aren't necessarily decisive in some of these hotly contested elections, they are the sort of grassroots ground forces that can really power an initiative at the state level. I know up in Michigan, they've had a lot of volunteers and you know, grassroots organization around this because they see this as a way of sort of striking back against the court's decision in Roe. And I feel, as a pro-lifer, I fear that the pro-life movement has not had the same level of energy because they've won a battle that they've been fighting for 50 years and you know, trying to figure out what comes next isn't always the easiest thing to do. And I do worry that they're going to lose next week because of it.
Dr. Patrick Brown, fellow with the Ethics and Public Policy Center, EPPC.org is their website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Really, Patrick, when it comes to any ballot question, to just show up as a either a yay or a nay is all well and good, but unless you offer an idea of how you're going to follow through should a ballot question pass. Case in point, with New Jersey and legal marijuana, yep, it was a popular decision by the vote of the people, but here we are almost 2 years later, and none of the plan has been put into play. That just becomes more of a way to discourage voters and lose the support of the voters that you're looking to tie into whatever your campaign and staying in office is all about.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And there's other states that have marijuana-related amendments on the ballot this year. You know, obviously, Colorado, which legalized marijuana in 2008, has a ballot on amendment that would legalize medical use of psychedelic drugs, which is kind of the next stage, you know, mushrooms and that sort of thing. And so, you know, we're just going to see these, you know, sort of continue to advance. And, you know, if you can get a committed group of people to sign enough signatures on a petition, you can get anything on the ballot. And, you know, it does require people to be informed voters to, you know, not just go off your gut instinct of, oh, well, that sounds good, but actually reading the arguments back and forth, that's not always easy. But when it comes to ballot amendments, that's the only backstop because, you know, it is in the hands of voters. And so we see states like Colorado, California, that have, you know, six or eight amendments on the ballot really asking voters a wide range of questions from sports betting to, we talked about abortion and taxes on you know, the wealthy and that sort of thing. These are big issues that, you know, I think sometimes they can kind of go overboard in the ballot process, but they're on the ballot and people are going to be voting on them, and it can really have a big impact on people's daily lives.
One example of the importance of knowing the full picture, Oregon's proposed amendment would make affordable health care a fundamental right. Problem is, who's going to pay for that? Well, the person who might be voting to support that ballot question.
Exactly. That's one of those things that sounds good. Oh, sure, everybody should have access to health care. And in Oregon, you know, definitely, you know, is generally pretty good about making sure that people who need health care can get access to it. But once you start talking about making that a right in the Constitution, well, that implies a whole host of things legally and you know, constitutionally that the government now has to pay for. And, you know, when you talk about making that affordable, you know, that's just something that's going to be a huge drain on the taxpayers of Oregon. And I think, you know, most voters will be smart enough to realize what that means over the long term, but some are going to be swayed by just, oh, the fact it sounds good and we want to help people. You have to be careful with these sort of things and not just go on first impression.
Another example of that idea, too, in Colorado, they want to increase taxes on higher-income household millionaires' taxes, what it's commonly called, for a good cause to pay for universal school lunches. Problem is, wherever a millionaire's tax has been implemented, guess what? People with a lot of money have no problem moving to another state. And then what are you going to pay for the program with?
Right, exactly. I think Colorado is definitely, you know, I we'll see how that one goes. The other one that I'm watching very carefully is California. They want to impose a millionaire tax to pay for climate initiatives, which isn't even feeding hungry kids, right? This is very pie in the sky, green energy type stuff. And I do think that at a certain point, if you're California, you know, there's always going to be a lot of rich people in California, but a lot of them are going to be looking at Florida and Texas and other places to move if that burden gets too high. And so I do think that it will be an interesting test of how sensitive people are to their tax burden, especially in an era of high inflation.
You referenced, too, how there are conservatives in Alaska, Missouri, New Hampshire. They're supporting a measure to hold a state constitutional convention, which I guess their idea is to get things more, the scale more tipping their side of the equation. But, well, then let's put the what if in. What if the other side gets what they want more than your side gets what they want? When you open the door like that, you might not like who walks through.
Exactly. I think that's the biggest concern with any of these constitutional conventions. And, you know, these amendments crop up from time to time, and I think it's grounded in a good place. People want to feel like they have the ability to weigh in on their state's direction, and I totally get that energy. But, you know, when you talk about basically opening the door to rewriting any kind of, you know, framework you want to put in that state constitution, that can really open the door to some bad actors. And I do hope that people just work through the normal process rather than trying to start from scratch, because you never know where it's going to go.
And also, too, there should be some sort of requirement or at least a mandate to make the wording English, because we've seen so many of these ballot questions where you vote yes, that really means no. You vote no, that really means yes.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely true. And sometimes that's strategic, right? If you're doing something that you don't want voters to necessarily know about, you'll figure out how to work in about 15 double negatives in there. I do hope that, you know, most voters, again, it just comes down to people being willing to educate themselves and not just going on the first, you know, for example, we'll go back to where we started on the, you know, some of these abortion amendments. If you're somebody who's sort of moderately pro-choice, you might think, oh, this is actually just restoring the old, you know, regime under Roe versus Wade, but it actually goes much further than that. It goes into late-term abortions. It goes towards removing parental consent for minors. So if you're a minor who wants to get an abortion, you no longer have to get consent from your parents or inform them about it. Those type of things have real ramifications on the legal landscape, and a lot of people just don't know about them. And so hopefully, as we go to the polls on Tuesday, if people who are in those states and have these on the ballot, people really take that into consideration.
He is a fellow with the Ethics and Public Policy Center. On the web, it's eppc.org. Patrick Brown, thank you so much for being here today.
Always a pleasure. Thanks very much.